True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck, and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch crushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
It's a Chris's only show on Fantasy Baseball Today. I'm Chris Towers here with Chris Welsh. No Frank Stample, no Scott White this week, but Chris and I are going to get you through the week, and we're going to be talking about rankings today. If you go to cbssports.com/fantasy/baseball, you can see for the first time in 2023 the full rankings from Frank, Scott, and myself for the 2023 season for both your Roto and your head-to-head points leagues. It's a big day. We've got our Fantasy Baseball Commissioner product launching today if you want to go get your league set up. It's a really exciting day. And Chris Welsh, how you doing?
Chris Towers, I'm doing quite great. It's like a subscription service. It's Chris's only.
Chris only, today. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. That's good. Apostrophe at the end.
Like
I'm doing very good. Ranks are always a joyous time. Anytime there's a release across the board. And I actually really like where we're at right now, too, because I feel like we're just about at the stage of full industry embracement of everything. You know, some things move slowly along. CBS does a great job of just staying relevant the whole year round and never stopping. But you're starting to get everybody now jumping into the fray where ranks are out there. Systems are starting to open up. We can mock draft more. So it's a glorious time for fantasy baseball.
Yeah, we were supposed to have a mock draft this week. We're probably going to have to push that to next week. But yeah, you got the bat projections were released on FanGraphs last week. I think I've seen Ariel Cohen talking about the ATC projections are coming soon. I'm excited to see. One thing I'm really interested to see in the bat is Derek Hardy's very, very smart and very good about like making adjustments for these kind of league-wide changes that we've talked about. And he's been like one of those guys who's ahead of the curve when it comes to like when teams change their ballpark dimensions, his rank, his projection system does a really good job of accounting for that, or the humidor stuff. And so I'm very interested to see. I know he had a note that he's going to start tweaking with some of the league-wide adjustments regarding the stolen bases and that stuff. So very excited to see what that all is going to look like. But we're going to talk about Frank, Scott, and I's rankings. We're going to talk about some, unfortunately, you know, Frank and Scott aren't here to defend themselves, so we'll just crap on their rankings.
That's the best. That's the best. That's the best situation that we're into. And we've got more, like, data for us, too. So, like, they're not here to appreciate. Like you were saying with the bat, I'm a bat and bat X, you know, apologist, I suppose. I actually sat with Derek multiple years at the Arizona First Pitch Conference, and I really like Derek, and I like what he does, and I like the setup. And there's some big, big differences that maybe we'll tie into some of this stuff. But yeah, this is like the best. We get all of this stuff. Frank and Scott aren't here. We get to look and just like roll our eyes, and we all get to judge without any counter judgment. It's the best. It's perfect.
I will say at the top of the discussion, we're going to talk about, take a quick look at just kind of the number one overall player, because there's some interesting stuff there with regards to roto rankings, especially. We're going to go through some of the bigger discrepancies from the top 100. And then I'm going to go through like each position in the second half of the show. And I don't think we're really going to be able to give everyone's rankings for every position. That would be kind of impossible. But some big questions that I've got in looking at the rankings. But you know, one thing that I always think about when it comes to rankings is like, I don't love the process of rankings just because it's not how my brain works. Like, I'm a big High Fidelity fan. I don't know if you've ever read the book or seen the movie, but that largely revolves around the idea of like random top five rankings, you know, top five desert island songs and the, you know, all this stuff. And I always struggle with rankings because it's like, it kind of depends on what my mood is. Like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 suggests a distinct hierarchy that doesn't necessarily exist. And I think that is also true in, you know, when it comes to fantasy sports, because like I look at my rankings and my top five in Roto, I've got Ronald Acuna, Aaron Judge, Jose Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez, and Trey Turner. And they're in that order. And that suggests that Ronald Acuna is number one and Trey Turner's number five. So I must like Ronald Acuna a lot more than Trey Turner. But what's actually the case is that I've got Ronald Acuna as a $44 player as my number one player. I've got Trey Turner as a $43 player in my auction value. So like the gap between there is not quite as big as it actually sounds in 1 through 5. So that's something I always struggle with, is like, why do you have this player 8 and this player 12? And it's like, because somebody had to be 8 and somebody had to be 12. Sometimes the gaps aren't as big as they actually seem, right?
Yeah, I struggle with this as well. I'm a little bit more, maybe I'm probably like in between, like take someone who just loves ranks and they're like, I got to rank a gajillion, blah, blah, blah. Like I'm somewhere in the middle. I do like a hierarchy. My hierarchy, kind of similar to what you're saying, though, exists more in tiers. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a tier-based guy where I'm going to tell you, like, listen, because I completely agree, because I do prospect rankings well, and people get very hyped up. Be like, well, listen, this guy's 24, but this guy's 48. And then you just want to reiterate and be like, well, listen, that gap between, that's kind of a tier of players, and you can choose between that. I kind of live in more of that tier-based range, but when we're talking about these type of ranks, at the top, I appreciate and kind of can jump into hierarchy, but I really fall off of ranks, especially like overall lists. Position lists, I think, are exponentially more valuable than anything else. Maybe we need a little bit more of a blueprint in the top. I'd say 50. 50 kind of seems right. That kind of gets you on your way and gets going. Yeah. But also at the same point, like that top 50, the differential between the top 50 players is usually relatively minimal in whatever amount of tiers maybe they are, Chris. Maybe there's like, you know, 6 tiers of players that exist inside the top 50, and picking between the highs and the lows isn't like, you know, it's not earth shattering stuff. And you don't hate Trey Turner because he's at 5, and you don't love Ronald Acuna more than anybody on the planet because you have him at 1. I also, by the way, on my ranks, I've got Ronald Acuna, when we're talking about head-to-head roto categories leagues, really, I've got Ronald Acuna at 1, but I got Trey Turner at 2, Ramirez, Judge, and Julio Rodriguez is my top 5. So it's like we all live in the same range. Yeah.
I think that 5 is pretty much, although I will point out, we'll just, you know, go through the top. I pulled the top 6 for everyone, or for Scott, Frank, and myself for Roto. And Scott goes Judge, Ramirez, Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, number 4, Julio Rodriguez, number 5, Ronald Acuna, number 6. Frank goes Jose Ramirez, Trey Turner, Aaron Judge, Ronald Acuna, Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Tucker, number 6. And I go Ronald Acuna, Aaron Judge, Jose Ramirez, Julio Rodriguez, Trey Turner, and Mookie Betts. So, you know, of the 6 players that we all rank, there are, 7 names in that 6? So not very much disagreement. I think there's pretty much a consensus top 5, although I think it's really interesting that Scott has Mookie Betts at number 4. And so you do have Ronald Acuna at number 1. What puts Ronald Acuna at the top of the list for you?
Well, I mean, one of the big things when you look back at this season, obviously the injury had some effects on suppressed power. He was top 15 in expected home run differential. He was on that top. And think about the amount of games. I think he played 120, 110 off the top of my head. I'm not, 119, yeah. And in 119 games, he was inside the top 15 of expected run differential, which put him on a positive front. And the big focus was, hey, look at how much power was gone and suppressed from him. What, he had only 15 homers. But he stole 29 bases. I mean, he was in like the top portion of the league in stolen bases, and he compensated for it. That's actually something that Bryce Harper always used to do. I always found very interesting about him was when Bryce Harper had like this like 4 or 5 year span where he would just kind of alternate, like, well, yeah, I'm not hitting for great average and power here, so now I'm stealing more bases, and the bases would go away and the power. Mookie Betts kind of does the same thing. I think the floor is still there. Projection's still very favorable on his side. Obviously, in categories, we're going to put a favor on stolen bases a whole bunch. And he has a bigger power potential for me than Trey Turner. There's some unknowns with Trey Turner. Maybe Jose Ramirez is even safer at more of a weird position. So I don't blame Frank, because I think me and Frank are probably our ranks are probably the closest, except we're kind of flipped a little bit on Ramirez and Acuna. Otherwise, we're almost, step and toe there.
It's a bit of a floor versus ceiling thing. And I guess I can see kind of the, like, I think the way a lot of people put it is you can't win your league with your first round pick, but you can lose it. I don't necessarily know if that's true. You can overcome pretty much anything that happens every year, but, you know, Ronald Acuna maybe does carry a little bit more risk than certainly someone like Jose Ramirez, who outside of that basically one weird calendar year where he was trying to go the other way and it just sapped his power production, has been, you know, metronomic in terms of his consistency. He's just, you know what you're going to get from Jose Ramirez. Ronald Acuna brings a little more variance to the table. But yeah, I mean, you look at the power wasn't there last season, but he was still hitting the ball really, really hard. 95th percentile expected WOBA, 86th percentile average exit velocity, 98th percentile max exit velo. So it was more a case, I think, of him, you know, like you said, not having his legs, probably getting on top of the ball a little too much. This is something I remember with early career Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he was hitting way too many ground balls. And one explanation, I think, from his personal batting coach was something like, you know, his weight was making it harder for him to stay back and get under the ball and drive in. So that was the big thing for him. And I think that's something that, you know, when you're dealing with being less than 100% in terms of, you know, leg strength, potentially, that's probably one thing. But yeah, the fact that he was running as much as he was, the fact that, I mean, he has the skill set to be a 50 homer, 50 steal guy. I don't think he will do either of them this season. Certainly not both. That would be, has anyone done that before? I don't think anyone's gone 50-50 before.
No, what didn't like Canseco go like 40-40?
40-40's happened a few times. Alfonso Soriano, Alex Rodriguez, Jose Canseco. That's happened a handful of times. But yeah, I mean, Acuna has both 50 homer and 50 steal upside, is I think the way to say it in terms of the skill set. It's unlikely he gets to either one of them, but like, if anybody could, I guess.
Yeah, and we're also kind of like, we're sitting in this place too where you're looking at these guys that where we have 30-30 potential. 30-30 potential is like a whole new like world now. You know what I mean? Like you want to play for that 30-30 in categories, and how many guys really have that top-end potential? There's maybe 4 or 5 that we're really looking at. And it actually kind of brings me, I'm really curious about for you, not to belabor all of this, but Trey Turner, you have Trey Turner down at 5, I believe it is. And Trey Turner, as far as draft champions go on NFBC, is the number one overall player, almost 30 drafts through. I've kind of struggled a little bit with him. The new destination where he's going to hit, I think, is a little bit in question. But like, what put Trey Turner down for you when a lot of the, you know, higher dollar leagues, even though maybe the format's a little bit different, like when, you know, he's number one, what put you down him there at 5?
For me, it mostly just comes down to, I think as an overall bat, he's a little weaker than Ramirez or Judge or Acuna. So it puts a lot of weight on the stolen base production. And I do worry that he might just be like good in stolen bases rather than, you know, the elite guy that he's been. Although the last two seasons, obviously, he hasn't been quite as much as a standout as he was early on in his career. But I think, you know, what we've seen the previous two seasons before last year was he wasn't running as much, but all of a sudden he looked like a 30 homer guy who was going to score 100 and maybe drive in 100 every year. And now I think with the slightly deader ball, I think that's probably, you know, he's probably more like that 18 to 22 homer guy that he was before the last couple of seasons. And it's nothing against him. He's an incredibly valuable player. He's a 5 category contributor, but I just do worry, like, is it more like 105 runs, 80 RBI, 20 homers, 25 steals? It's a great player. But, yeah, you know, I think the other guys might have a little more upside overall.
Also, like, you don't want to make like a huge deal about this type of stuff.
Yeah.
But him, where he's hitting in the batting order might be important. Last year, mm-hmm. he had 78 games batting two and 59 batting third. Only 23 games in the leadoff spot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting it because you have Mookie Betts on the Dodgers, you know, you can have him be your leadoff guy. And Trey Turner is put into like a really solid RBI spot.
Yeah.
If that's taken away from him in Philly, which looks like that's going to be the case. He leads off. Schwarber hits two. Ramuto hits three until Harper comes back. And then they kind of reorder that. Then you are probably taking RBI off. If there's no Harper, maybe there's a little bit of takeoff on the runs. Power seems like it's fine. Stolen bases seem like it's capped. So now you're going from, you know, who he was last year, yeah. where it was an almost, you know, like what was it, 25, I think 29 stolen bases.
Is this trying 27 to load steals, me? 21 homers, 101 yeah. runs, 100 RBI.
And now you're maybe looking at like 20, 25, 85, 85 with a really good batting average. That's a fantastic player, but it does take a little bit off the top, yeah. though there's a ton of variables out there, and that's kind of the difference between like maybe a floor that exists with Turner, maybe a little bit more volatility with Acuna, and that's why maybe if you know the three bears, the porridge is just right for Jose Ramirez, which I don't blame anybody yeah. for having him at the top because he's kind of a mixture of both of those players.
Where are you on Kyle Tucker? So Frank's got him sixth, I've got him eighth, I think Scott has him eighth as well. Where do you come down on Kyle Tucker, just generally speaking?
Yeah, this was another one of those. This is why I said, like, I think Frank and I are a pretty lock in step outside of the top end debate or the Ramirez and Acuna debate, because I'm also at number six. You know, the 30 homers, 25 stolen bases, awesome, really low strikeout numbers, helps create a floor. Batting average always worries me a little bit, but projections still very, very favorable on his yeah. side this year. One of those things, like, we see some extreme differences when you start to dig in between Steamer and the Bat X, and you're going to probably see more. This is not one of those. This is not one. I mean, they are almost lock in step. The batting average is a tick down as far as the Bat X goes, but the counting stats is what I was getting at. He's essentially a 30-20, almost, if we want to do averages, 95-95 guy with a 260 batting average in a fantastic lineup, a good hitting spot. I think he's safe. I think we are paying the high cost. I think we're kind of paying max value on him with, I'm a little weary of like lowish batting average players with the big counting stats, because I feel like there's more volatility, but Kyle Tucker with the low strikeout rates does feel like a player that's always got room to grow on the batting average.
He's got a bit of the Jose Ramirez where like he strikes out so infrequently that it's like, man, why isn't he a better batting average guy? And it's because like Jose Ramirez, I think he pulls the ball quite a bit. He pulls the ball in the air quite a bit. And so it just, I think it has a little bit of a deleterious effect on his BABIP. You know, last year, 261, that's really low. I don't think it's going to be that low, but I think you can see that in the projections where Steamer has a 287 BABIP, the Bat has 274, Bat X has 280. Those are all relatively, it's a, you know, with BABIP is obviously a stat that fluctuates quite a bit, but that's a relatively, I think, narrow range, but relatively low for a player of this caliber. And I think he's probably going to be a low BABIP guy, although maybe the shift changes help him in that regard.
You know, well, I think it's a fact. Yeah, and I think so. I think that's one of those. A lot of people are speculating that the shift could work in his favor. I think a fascinating debate down the line is because I appreciate that a lot of, I think all of you got, no, not the Frank, but you and Scott have already kind of planted your flag on this for Mookie Betts. I think Mookie Betts versus Kyle Tucker, if you get into the player debate territory, is a really fascinating one, because Kyle Tucker seems to maybe have the upside on, he's a little sexier as far as like the counting stat totality goes, especially with the stolen bases and stuff. But, you know, Mookie Betts, I think you have a hard time believing that he ever can really keep under 260 on the batting average.
Yeah.
He had a career high in homers this past year. Runs were through the roof. You still got most of your players outside of Trey Turner. Stolen bases have kind of tapered off a little bit, but then there's this extra little incentivized thing. That Dave Roberts talked about him maybe playing second base more this year. And there's questions around the middle. What if that happens? What if you get your second base eligibility in a position that is kind of weak? So like the floor of Mookie Betts versus that up, and I'm not trying to say there's no upside with Mookie, so don't get that, you know, twisted for anybody listening, but like that floor of what Mookie Betts provides and maybe that second base eligibility versus Tucker with this pretty loud counting stats, I think is a really fun debate. And I can appreciate that you guys both, I believe I just turned away from it, you both have Mookie Betts over Kyle Tucker, you and Scott White.
Yes,
both.
Yeah, yeah, I do. And part of it for me is just I trust Mookie's like hit skill, I guess would be the way that I would put it. I think, you know, 2021, the last two seasons especially, you've seen a bit of a drain on the batting average. It's similar to Kyle Tucker, where very rarely strikes out, 16% strikeout rate around there for both of them, but batting average in the 260 to 270 range over the past couple of seasons. I have a little more faith in Mookie, like figuring that out and starting to, you know, maybe go back to being not a, you know, 300 hitter every year, but, you know, potentially getting back to like the 290, 300 BABIP range, in which case, you know, I do think he can be someone who hits 290. I think he's probably got a better chance of that than Tucker. And I think part of it comes down to one, Tucker's weird in terms of the stolen bases because he's fast, but he's not necessarily a blazer. He went from, I think it was 14 steals 2 years ago to 25 last season. He's been a very, very efficient base stealer. And then for me, it's also just like Mookie Betts might get 100 more plate appearances than him. Like that's, you know, that matters a little more in head-to-head points. I think there's more of a clear distinction between the two of them there. But, you know, that's three quarters of a plate appearance per game. You know, that's massive in head-to-head points where your best players are probably averaging close to a point per plate appearance. But even in a head-to-head point or in a roto league or a categories league, you know, last season we saw it came out to what, 17 more runs for Mookie Betts, a similar number of similar RBI totals, I think, right? Or was it?
I think
so. Mookie got like 100 and almost 200 combined runs in RBI, 199. Tucker was like 180-ish, 170.
Yeah. Well, one thing I don't want to like try to create this narrative, but one thing to think about is what we were just talking about. You are taking Trey Turner out of that lineup. You know, I mean, I think it was Mookie Betts having 117 runs being a leadoff guy. You still have Freddie Freeman in there, but they are going to implement guys like James Outman and Trace Thompson and Gavin Lux
might play something like every day for them.
You know, Miguel Vargas is working at second base. So I guess my only point is like you are taking a 100 RBI guy out of that lineup in a primary spot. And maybe you could question there's going to be a downtick in overall runs. And I think like the Bat X is equating for that 107 runs projected for Steamer, only 98 on the Bat X. So he's an under 100 guy, but the homers and stolen bases are pretty relative. Again, I think that's why it's a fascinating debate, because is there a better floor with Mookie Betts? But maybe there's a question about the runs, and Kyle Tucker's just a little bit louder on the stats. It's just one of those that, like, you know, this is a quintessential player debate of the first round that I don't think 10 analysts are going to have a primary feel on one of those guys. But Kyle Tucker is kind of the narrative player that's higher. NFBC, the draft champions, he is going off at 6, where Mookie Betts was going off at 11.
And I think that makes sense. Tucker, you know, you're also different parts of the aging curve, so I think that explains some of it. And then the stolen base premium, which, you know, as we talked about, I mean, all of the time, all off season, but especially last week, you know, the rule changes could really drastically impact how stolen base rates look. So that's something to keep in mind. I want to move on to some ranking discrepancies from the top 100 that stood out to me in looking at them, and just kind of get your thoughts on where you rank. And I think the first one's really interesting, because last week on the show, Scott was talking about how because we expect stolen bases to be more prevalent, he's a little less worried in the early rounds about making sure he gets his stolen bases. And I think that's reflected in Rafael Devers, who ranks 11 for him versus 21 for Scott. Now, Rafael Devers is, I think, at the very least, a 3-category and probably a 4-category stud. I mean, the counting stats last season were not where you want them to be for a player of his caliber, but he's going to hit for power. He's going to hit for batting average. You know you're not going to get any stolen bases from him. So Scott's got him 11. Frank's got him 21. I've got him 15 right in the middle. Where do you come out?
I am at 20. So I'm me and Frank are kind of lock in step there. I actually found it really difficult. Yeah, third base is like so top heavy. And then it really just, it's like a funnel. It just goes whoop. It's a really quick funnel that starts to go down. But that top end of Austin Riley versus Devers versus Manny Machado, I really think is tough, and I wouldn't kill anybody on any side that they wanted to take. I think I like Austin Riley a little bit more this year, which I put him ahead. I am taking a little bit of team context in. I do think, though, the Red Sox have sneakily brought on some okay contact play. I mean, Justin Turner, Kike Hernandez is going to be out. Like, there's a couple interesting guys that are going to get in position for RBI opportunities, but I feel like Atlanta's offense is just better. And Austin Riley really proved to be a consistent hitter. So I put him above. Manny Machado, I think, kind of speaks for himself as well. I like Devers, but I, in my own personal ranks, I tiered out those three, and Devers came out a little bit lower. I do agree with the assessment that stolen base might be a tiny bit more prevalent throughout drafts, but it just doesn't deter me personally from still getting the top end. I've kind of been of the ilk for a couple of years now that it's like, yes, this is true, but those top end stolen base guys in the first couple of rounds, there's a reason that they're there. The consistency is what I want to pay for. So I'm much more likely to pay for consistency with higher stolen bases on the top end. But again, this is not like a down talk of Rafael Devers. I'm just not the high guy, but I do sit in the Frank category on this one.
Yeah. I've got Devers, Machado, and Riley in my overall ranks. And actually, we can throw Bobby Witt in there too, because they're literally all back to it. 16, 17, 18, 19 for me in my overall ranks. So it's one tier. It doesn't necessarily, I don't have a strong preference one way or the other. Devers just a little more proven. I don't think the cops are coming for us for our
Well, I think they know we're about to talk about Bobby Witt, so yeah. I think they're getting ready. Someone's going to – it might be me that's about to get arrested, by the way, on the Bobby Witt conversation. So we're about to
Bobby have. Witt, we'll move on. Scott has him 24th. Frank's got him 14th. Again, I'm right in the middle at 17. Who are you closer to? I'm going to guess it's Frank, given the nature of the conversation so far.
Yes, and unfortunately, I'm going to beat all of you guys. I'm higher than any of you guys on him. I've got him at 12 right now, so I'm the high guy on it. And this is one. Now, I think there's volatility that 100%. Yes. You know, we all know this. He was very pull heavy last year. Only two of his homers did not hit that left to left center field wall, which I suppose could be a little bit concerning. It's a poorish team context as well, which is a little bit concerning. Mm-hmm. But just what he did last year, 20 homers, 30 stolen bases, a 254 batting average. I think it's hard to ignore. Also, at a position that we're paying a premium on Jose Ramirez. And this is another one of those guys. He's going to qualify at third, also have shortstop eligibility. Not that we necessarily care about the shortstop right now. I mean, if you're paying up for him, and that's kind of what I'm putting my foot down here, is I'm paying up for him for that third base spot, that I still think there is room to grow. Now, I don't know if I'm not the type of person that's going to be like, well, look what he did in his rookie year. What can he do in his sophomore year? No, I think the league is going to make some pretty dramatic adjustments to him, but I don't think the stolen base numbers are going to come off the board. They still need to manufacture runs. I think he proved to be a really solid hitter, even through some of the warts that he has in this team context has. That, like Julio Rodriguez, I'm willing to bet on the rebound in a sophomore year, that I do think it's going to be a little bit closer to repeating than it is going to be massive growth. So am I willing to pay for 20, 25 or 20, 30 again, if I can get somewhere in there? Yeah, I am. And the batting average actually improves this year with a 23-24 homer to stolen base for Derek Cardi's BatX, which you guys can find on FanGraphs. And that's not quite as good as Steamer, but I love to see projection systems go on the upside of batting average. And I think that is a huge key to his success. So that's why I think he's like a really good wheel pick for stolen bases, but he is more volatile than a lot of these other guys. And I would be taking him over, you know, probably some premium names as well.
Yeah, and the thing with Bobby Witt is there's no denying the talent. You know, when the underlying stats, you know, they suggest he about earned what he did last season in terms of his expected stats and all that. But 100th percentile sprint speed, 92nd percentile max exit velocity. I mean, we're talking about a guy who very much is a rough, unmolded bit of clay in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
but
good way to put
not as... Like, not as whiff heavy as you would think. Like, 45th percentile in whiff rate, 49th percentile in strikeout rate. He's a very aggressive swinger. He goes out of the zone, but it's the kind of thing where, like, the fact that he was so aggressive and that there wasn't as much swing and miss in his game as you would think, given, you know, I think relatively poor plate discipline overall, I think probably suggests that just a few tweaks in terms of his pitch selection could make a big difference. And we saw last season, you know, he was a bit hit or miss, much better in the first half than the second half. I think we already saw the adjustments. The OPS dropped from 749 before the All-Star break to 686 afterwards. And, you know, baseball's all about the adjustment, then the adjustment to the adjustment, and all of those things. But generally speaking, like, you're talking about a 22-year-old, still 22-year-old player with great prospect pedigree, very loud tools. It's a type of player that, like, it's not a bad idea to bet on. So there's not a lot of, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, I think. There's not a lot in his skill set that, like, screams unsustainable from what he did last season. So I don't think we're going to see much regression from him, even if he doesn't take that big step.
21% strikeout rate. I mean, that's perfectly solid.
That's above average or below average.
Yeah. Yeah. If you saw like a 25, 26, maybe you're like, nah, I don't know. But this isn't O'Neill Cruz or anything like that. These are big counting stats. And again, you know, citing this for just for the purposes of you guys knowing, when you're taking bigger shots, which the NFBC leagues will, that's where our ADP data is right now, just to talk about it. He's going 7. So people willing to take the risk on a bigger shot for homers and stolen bases, also at third base, which is pretty cool.
Here's an interesting one. Scott's got Ozzie Albies 27th. Frank and I both have him outside of our top 40. What do you think about Ozzie Albies?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I have him at 43, and I don't think this is going to be super popular, but I think I can have this conversation with you about it, of anybody, is I'm a Jazz Chisholm guy this year. Sure. I have volatility in my fantasy game. I'm definitely not a play it super safe. I think you do have to pick your points, and
yes.
You know, I don't know if I want to go and have, like, Bobby Witt and Jazz Chisholm and then go take O'Neill Cruz. I'm not going to do that, but, like, I want to take my shots in certain places. I'm very pro Jazz Chisholm this year, especially if he can get healthy. I'm always worried a little bit that he's going to become, you know, the newest version of Giancarlo Stanton. There's always something with him. He's also really volatile in how he attacks the baseball. He's very pull heavy and ginormous bat speed. But what I love, and you're going to get my vibe here, is, like, I like 25-25 guys, and Jazz Chisholm is that. Ozzie is safer on a better offense, and I like Ozzie, but I have him actually exactly in Frank's spot. I was surprised about that. I'm at 43, so I'm with you and Frank on the Ozzie Albies front, but I have Jazz above everybody. He's my top second baseman for willing to take a shot, because I think there's kind of a big crew. I don't want to overpay or anything like that, but I also think there's just kind of a crew of guys. It's like, hey, if I miss on, you know, Albies, do I think I'm losing anything with Altuve? Nope. Do I think I'm losing a ton with Marcus Semien? Batting average, but not really anything else across the board. So I think it's kind of a bigger tier. So I don't see the need in overpaying for Ozzie Albies. When there have been some questions about where he bats in the order, though Dansby's gone, a little bit of injury stuff. If he gets back to being a high, you know, a good stolen base and home run guy, he's going to be exponentially valuable. But I'm siding on Jazz Chisholm. One of the few instances where I'm really pushing my chips in on a player on a worse team, because I do want to have a focus on, you know, letting the edge be a player that's on a better team with more run and RBI opportunities. This just kind of isn't one of those cases.
Here's an interesting one, and we'll talk about some that I'm out of the range on, and that's Carlos Rodon, who is, he's my SP6 and he's my number 33 overall player. Frank and Scott both have him outside of their top 45. He's more in the like 11 to 12 range for Scott and Frank at SP. Do you agree with them or me?
Okay, so let me take a look, because I will tell you this. I am lower on Rodon than most. Okay. Where did you say they had him at pitcher?
11 and 12.
Yeah, I'm lower. I have him at 17. So, and I've got him quite a bit lower on the overall rank. I do have him in a tier. I want to put him, I have him in a tier that starts at SP 11. So again, if you want to, like, we can pick apart ranks and stuff like that, but I have him in this tier that goes 11 to 18. I'm worried about the New York context. I really am. Sure. The high strikeout numbers are fantastic, but I am worried about what it's going to do. Obviously, you know, Gerrit Cole can break the mold, and Luis Severino, when healthy, can do it. But Frankie Montas just kind of fell apart, and we see pitchers find success when they get out of there. I'm worried about it with Rodon. There's also the injury stuff that always seems to be looming. He got his money. He's not a player that I feel adamant about reaching for, and I feel safer with, I mean, a couple of guys I have above. I've obviously got Aaron Nola above, but Zach Gallen, Kevin Gausman, those are a couple of players I would rather pay the price on than Carlos Rodon right now. But you are obviously pretty high on him, so New York doesn't scare you.
No, I mean, I think you account for, like, there's pluses and minuses to it, right? It's a team that's going to likely win a lot of games. They're going to have, you know, good run support. He is a fly ball heavy pitcher. That's the one thing. You know, the ground ball rate, 38% in 2021, 34% in 2022. He's benefited from relatively low home run to fly ball ratios. In 2021, it was 9.6%. Last season, 6.5%. He's not going to do that again. There's a big difference between pitching in San Francisco and pitching in New York, and that mostly comes about in the number of home runs you're going to give up, especially when you put the ball in the air. That's going to be an issue for him. And as we've seen with Gerrit Cole, like, that can be an issue. I think the thing that I like about Carlos Rodon, one, just ridiculous strikeout numbers. I think he's right there with anybody in terms of strikeout ability. Two, I like that last season he actually came out and was slightly more fastball heavy than he was in 2021. And I thought, wow, you know, this is a really, relatively speaking, a very fastball heavy guy, 59% in 2021. I was like, I don't know if you can do that every time, but his fastball is just so overwhelmingly dominant that it's actually a swing and miss pitch for him. It's
61% to your point. Yeah. He increased it up to a little over 61% with a 27. The whiff rate went down a little bit on the fastball this past year, but he actually added some spin, but the whiff rate was still, 27.9%, which is probably for a fastball on the higher range of the overall whiff. Yeah.
But the way I look at it is like, let's say the fastball does start to get hit a little more. You know, he throws up in the zone. He gives up a few home runs. I do think there is room for him to change his arsenal and still be very effective because his slider's a really, really great pitch as well. So I think there's room for him to still make some adjustments and still be a very effective pitcher. I don't think it's the kind of thing that, like, he starts to get hit hard and loses a ton. So I do think you're betting on just absolutely ridiculous, possibly, best in the league kind of strikeout numbers that are going to mitigate some of the issues that can come from pitching in Yankee Stadium, like we've seen with Gerrit Cole. The injuries and the workload, I think, are a concern, but the fact that he made it through last season without issue, more or less, does, make me feel, I don't want to say good about him in terms of health, but I tend to think all starting pitchers come with a very high degree of injury risk outside of Gerrit Cole, Gerrit Cole and Aaron Nola and a handful of guys. But otherwise, your risk of missing six starts for any given starting pitcher is very high. So his is higher, but I don't think it's so high that it makes me want to avoid him. One pitcher that I'm surprised I was lower on in the overall ranks is Tristan McKenzie. He's 91 for Scott, 85 for Frank, 111 for me. And I was the Tristan McKenzie backer last year. Where are you on Tristan McKenzie?
Well, Mr. Christoph, can I ask you something? Why do you hate Tristan McKenzie? You clearly hate Tristan McKenzie.
That's the right question to be asking. I think a lot of it comes down to, one, I think there was a little bit of luck in terms of his home run prevention last season. He didn't miss as many bats as he did the year before. And I kind of look at him as like a guy who, he's going to have a very good bat. I think that's a strong skill that he has. But other than that, I'm not sure like what he's great at, right? Like, I don't know if I believe that the control, 2.1 walks per nine last season, I feel like that's probably going to regress. I think the strikeout rate is probably going to be a tick above average, but probably not great. And I just think when you add in, likely home run regression, I just think he's probably going to be good, but not great,
Yeah. I have him at 95, so I'm kind of in the range with Scott and Frank, but I'm pushing a little bit towards yours. I think his cost is moving up, which I'm not going to love. He has had a three-year decrease. Obviously, his first year was minimal pitches, but he's had a three-year decrease in K percentage. The hard hit percentage is sat in the 40 percentile range. He's not like an elite over the season type of strikeout guy. He definitely gets those games going. There's three pitches over 20% of the time, which I think keeps people on their toes. His fastball is not elite, but his curveball is 45% whiff rate, which has been really dominant. So control's like a big key with him. I like him. I guess I'm a little bit indifferent. I don't feel passionately that he would be a player I don't take. I don't feel passionately that he's a player that I have to have. I am probably cheating a little bit, looking for a little bit more strikeouts where I can. I want some safety net in those middle, like probably 50 to 60 overall range. I'm looking for some safer pitchers. I'm trying to cheat on stolen bases a little bit higher with a few guys I like more than most people, like Strider and McClanahan. And then McKenzie is just, I'm a little bit indifferent about the range because I kind of agree with you. I'm not sure where he's elite. He definitely puts up some of those games and, he hasn't maintained crazy hard hit stuff. And his ERA was obviously a crazy low this past year, but he had had an expected ERA of like 3.5. So, yeah, I'm just kind of in the middle on McKenzie.
You know who he reminds me of is like Jose Berríos 4 years ago, where like when you watch him and when he's on, he looks so good that you're like, man, this guy could be an absolute like ace pitcher. And then you take a step back and you look at the overall numbers and it's like, it's a fine pitcher. And I think we get enamored with like, you know, the really pretty curveball gifs and stuff like that. But I think the overall arsenal, and actually they're pretty similar pitchers in terms of that. They're, you know, below average velocity. The fastball tends to get hit somewhat hard. You know, I think that's more of an issue for Tristan McKenzie. But, you know, Berríos very, you know, relies on the curveball for his swing and miss stuff. That's a big thing for McKenzie as well. And so I just, it's one where like, I think Jose Berríos was someone that people kept chasing upside with for like three straight years. And he was just like pretty good. And I think that's probably where Tristan McKenzie is going to end up, is like a mid threes ERA, not a ton of strikeouts. Hopefully, you know, what we saw last season with 191 innings, like he was efficient last season. If he can be, you know, close to 190 innings every year, then I think that's a very valuable pitcher. But like Jose Berríos, where it was sort of, he's good every year, and also disappointing.
Yeah, I could almost see like if there was a path of maybe if he had ever developed like this really dominant changer, we would call him like, you know, Sandy Alcantara light, you know, because he can just eat innings and the strikeouts are kind of equivalent to the innings. He did improve his slider, I mentioned a little bit. He added just about a full mile per hour increase on the slider this past year. It lowered on whiff percentage, but they were also hitting it like almost 2 miles an hour less. So, I mean, yeah, it was a really low EV on the slider, which I think that slider in its higher efficiency added to the fastball being able to set up and the curveball being able to get strikeouts. So he's a fascinating pitcher, but I kind of agree. I kind of think we're capped, even though I'm like, hey, it could be like Sandy Alcantara. I don't think he'll be like that. I kind of agree. I think he's like a 3 ERA pitcher that he's a workhorse, might get you to 200 strikeouts. He's coming at a decent cost. I think it's pretty good. I think he actually sits in this range. There's a couple of rookie pitchers. I particularly really like Nick Lodolo this year. Like Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green, him, they kind of sit in there. Like I wouldn't hate getting a McKenzie and a Lodolo as like my SP 3 and 4, depending how heavy investment I'm putting into it. But it's interesting seeing the kind of path of where everyone has him ranked.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/MLB podcast.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're going to move on to some news and notes, and then we're going to go through some other positional questions that I've got for the rankings. But news and notes, Trey Mancini signed a 2-year deal with the Cubs, according to The Athletic. This also means that Matt Mervis, who is also left-handed, almost certainly starts the season at AAA. That's frustrating. I know a lot of people like him as a breakout candidate. Would you still draft him later in your drafts?
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's funny because Frank texts me this immediately and he texts me and he went, no, because we had this conversation. I've been a little bit more loud about this and Frank turned it into a different thing we talked about on here. But I've been saying since free agency started up, the Cubs have been telling us that they don't trust Mervis in some capacity. Mm-hmm. Yes, Eric Hosmer is on a very cheap contract that they could get out from if they would like to. but I think defensively they want him here. That's not something that Mervis is good with. And I don't think you brought Trey Mancini in for that. And it's a clubhouse leader as well. And then they bring in Trey Mancini, a second piece who's probably going to be more of a primary DH. They're telling us something that maybe they want more control. Maybe they want Mervis to prove a few more things that he didn't in the AFL after his three stops. They're just telling us something. Does that mean that Mervis will not play? No. If he has a great spring, it's going to be hard to keep him off the roster. If he has a great spring and then they just send him down anyways and he has an awesome April in AAA, he'll come up. So I think in deeper leagues, more than willing. But I am more pessimistic on Mervis, I think, than everybody kind of else is right now.
Any interest in Mancini for your mixed leagues?
Minimal. Yeah, minimal. Like late flyer. Maybe corner infield or something like that.
All right. Frankie Montas is expected to miss the first month of the season dealing with shoulder soreness. That's a scary sign when it's January and we're already talking about, well, he probably won't play until May, especially given how his season ended. I mean, he's worth drafting, but how low does Frankie Montas move?
Pretty low. I mean, I got to tell you, it's moving into the territory where not interested.
I think especially in those like NFC leagues where you don't have an IR spot.
Almost anything at this point. Like, I really don't want to go into a season with an injured player. Fernando Tatis is a completely different story. It's a suspension. I'm willing to take the risk. Guys, a pitcher that has an injury going into the season, that's not something I think I'm going to be getting like a big old steal on people on. So I'm going to probably overall avoid. I don't want to be like he's off the list, but if I'm going to lose a month out of a pitcher that already had a down year, I'm out of it. And that splitter has got to be on for him to be going. So I think I'm out.
Yeah, we've seen there's a minimal margin for error for him. And you know, I'm generally the injuries don't matter guy. I think that's the way people tend to view me. But I think it's more past injuries are probably overrated in terms of risk. Present injuries, probably a little underrated. We tend to be a little more optimistic about injury timetables and guys coming back and being themselves when they're currently injured. So yeah, I think
I agree with
you. You have to move a lot down. I saw today the Blue Jays are changing their outfield wall dimensions. They haven't announced exactly what that's going to look like. They're currently in the process of, you know, making the actual physical changes in their stadium, and there's supposed to be an announcement in February.
It's all the rage.
What the dimensions are going to be. Sounds like it could be moving the fences in, but making the walls higher. What that impact will be, I'll leave that to someone smarter than me to figure out.
That's all the rage. If your team isn't moving their walls, does your team even care? I don't know. I don't think so. I love it.
Yeah, the Marlins moved their walls in and clearly made a huge difference.
We're gonna have little league softball, like 200-foot walls. It's just we're gonna be cranking homers. This is how they're gonna curb back to the home run era of the 90s. No steroids, just 200-foot walls and 98 homers by July. It'll be great.
All right, Alex Kirilloff could be a bit behind in spring training coming off wrist surgery per The Athletic, but he should be ready for the start of the season. And you know, it's not like they're concerned about him. It's just he's getting a few fewer reps at this point than, you know, most other players.
This is his second time, though.
Yeah.
This is his second. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. It's his second wrist injury that I love Kirilloff more than most people. I actually got to interview him on my Prospect One show a couple years back. His dad is a hitting coach. He's a really smart guy. But, like, this dude can't stay healthy. He cannot stay healthy whatsoever. So I am very, very concerned about Kirilloff. And he's not. I'm disinterested in this year, especially if we're coming off of a wrist injury. We're like, yeah, I think we'll be good by the season. Well, if you're going to miss all the spring training, that's going to hold you back. Royce Lewis actually literally told me that when we were talking about him and his return in, I think it was like 2019, that it was like missing all of spring training. You then spent the time in the minors doing your spring training and you kind of fall behind. Kirilloff has just not found his footing. He needs to go into a season healthy. He's not doing it on a recurring injury. So no bueno for me.
Yeah, I got to see it at this point. Kyle Hendricks, uncertain for opening day, coming back from a shoulder issue, but said he feels good. So, you know, if he's not ready for opening day, it probably won't be too long after that. Although, at this point, I don't think we have much interest in Kyle Hendricks. And the Red Sox signed Jorge Alfaro to a minor league contract. I don't think we have much interest in him, but the Red Sox catching situation is pretty grim. They have Reese McGuire, who had a decent finish to last season. Got a fly in my room that was flying about around my face, so that was fun. But you know, Alfaro does have a chance to, you know, lock in a role with the Red Sox. Not necessarily someone we'd be interested in, but still has interesting skills. I don't know if he's ever going to turn them into actual baseball production. And that's going to do it for news and notes. And let's move on to some more starting pitcher rankings discussions. And I think the most interesting one here is Justin Verlander, Scott's number one starting pitcher. That is, you know, I've got him, let's see, third. Frank has him sixth. I assume you're probably closer to Frank.
I have him seven. Yeah, I've got him at seven. So, yeah.
It's not for me, you know, I'm in the middle. It's not that I dislike Justin Verlander. It's not that I love Justin Verlander. I think, like, you know, Corbin Burns is a better pitcher. I think Garrett Cole's a better bat for volume. So Justin Verlander kind of splits the difference between them. But, you know, Verlander's strikeout rate wasn't where we typically want to see it for a guy who ranks number one at starting pitcher, 9.51 last season. 1.75 ERA. Look, nobody thinks he's going to repeat that. But I think, does it come down to just, you know, I think Scott has talked about it quite a bit this offseason. So for you, is it just the strikeout numbers aren't quite where you'd want them to be for an elite starting pitcher?
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of boils it down. I mean, also, we're getting older. I mentioned on here a bunch of times that falling knife, you don't want to be the one that's catching it when it's coming down. But, you know, he is kind of bucking that trend and curbing that. And but it was 175 innings. You know, he hadn't pitched under 200 innings. I mean, my God, like, pretty much 2015 was the last time he'd been under 200 innings and in a full season marker. But yeah, the strikeouts went below 10 at 9.5. He's still a great elite pitcher, but I don't feel adamant enough, especially with a change in destination. That doesn't correlate with me of like changing teams and going over to the Mets and leaving that. I mean, a Mets great offense. I don't want to be like, that's much different than what he had in Houston, but I think team context and adjustments and going into a much bigger market, that there's something there. So I can't talk myself into him going back to being number one outside of, he has just been consistent his entire career. I got him at seven, which I thought was pretty aggressive. NFBC is the 11th pitcher, starting pitcher going off the board, technically the 16th pitcher in those draft champions. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's solid, but he's not in my top five. I'm going a little bit younger inside my top five, to be honest with you.
Is Garrett Cole number one for you, though?
He's not. It's actually okay. Corbin Burns. But I've got Burns and Cole as like the 1-2 tier. I think those are the top guys. I think they belong in the same territory. Good strikeouts. You could talk about team context, which can get Cole maybe the edge. But there's just a part of me that still feels that blow up that is going on with Cole. And the obviously the ballpark factors really don't necessarily work in his favor. But it's huge strikeout numbers. I just think they're 1-2. I'm just banking a little bit more on Corbin Burns. But I will point out, both are not in my draft peripheral. I am not looking to draft either one of those. I probably on an overall have them lower than most. I'm not sure about you guys. Points would completely be different here, but I probably have them a little bit lower than most.
Yeah, I've got, let me see. I'm looking at, I've got Cole and Burns are 21 and 22 for me. So, you know, there's a decent chance I'll end up with him. And I actually like the kind of, you know, we call it hero RB in football. I think the way I think about pitchers and running backs is very similar, where I want like one or two really good ones, and I probably want to avoid, you know, in football we've called it the RB dead zone, which is like rounds 3-ish through 8 are where like historically running back tends to be just a bad return on investment. Starting pitcher, from the research that I've done, it tends to be more like rounds 4 through 8, 4 through 10 tend to, like, there's not that much of a difference between what you historically get in terms of the pitchers that you draft in the third and fourth round versus like the ninth and 10th rounds. This is what I've discovered. Like, the elite starting pitchers tend to be really good and tend to be really good every year. And that's the same for running backs, right? The top 12, top six, whatever you want to call it. And we've had this argument, and I throw these numbers out every year, and I'll do my research again soon and make the same argument I always do. But it's basically like, you want one or two really, really good pitchers, and then I think you want a lot of guys in the like 150 plus range is generally how I tend to view it, but 100 plus. So that's, you know, I'm probably more likely to take one of the aces than you know, I think most people on our show for sure. And then the other question I want to ask you at starting pitcher before I move on, does Shohei Ohtani belong in the top 12? I've got him at 12. I'm the only one with him in my top 12. Am I being too aggressive?
You're not. I've got him at 10 on my list as far as an SP. I do. I mean, you know, what he's done has kind of just broken the mold. And it also comes back to, like, I would reiterate, we talk about, hey, number one, if you play in a daily moves league, and Ohtani is one player, he is the number one overall player in fantasy. And there's just no discussion about it. He is the guy. It's almost trite at this point. Like, I want to, like, talk and I want to do mocks in different ways when I do, you know, you have to, like, differentiate when you do mocks and be like, is this a daily or a weekly transactions? Because just Ohtani has to go at number one at every point. But yeah, I mean, elite strikeout number, almost 12 K per nine last year, walks lowered, elite ERA 2.33, an xFIP of 2.65, which was elite. He had 28 starts this past year. Obviously, he's going to get maybe a tad bit less if they're going to run out six-man rotations, but I don't know. The 28 starts makes me feel pretty good. The strikeout numbers also elite. He had 15 wins on that Angels team. On that Angels team who tried their best hopefully to improve the offense this year, maybe a little bit more health. So yeah, I think he's in that top 10 category, maybe a little bit more volatile than others, but single pitcher Ohtani is a top 10, top 12 guy, I think pretty easy.
Yeah, I think a couple of things that impact his values. One, there's just, he inherently has higher risk in terms of injury because he's doing both, you know, like no other pitcher in baseball has the risk of spraining their ankle on first base, you know, like that's a risk for him. I don't think it's the biggest risk for him. You know, I think
it's funny. I actually look at it
a bigger risk.
I was just about to say, I look at it the inverse, that it's the pitching to me that makes the hitter more susceptible, because we're actually paying a higher cost for just hitter Ohtani. I think people are going to jump, even though he's util only, the stats are ridiculous. You're paying higher cost for util only Ohtani than pitcher. And it's the pitching that I think is exponentially more dangerous for that hitter version of Ohtani, which, by the way, I continuously hate talking about this person as two different people. But
yeah, the other thing that I think impacts his value as a pitcher is just, like, you're probably going to draft him as a hitter. If there's only one, if you have to make that choice every week, you're probably going to use him as a hitter more often than as a pitcher. So I think that just kind of, you know, might drive his pitcher value down when we're talking about it. Just, you're less likely to use him there. I don't know if that factors into the way other people rank him, but that's just one other thing I would think of.
When you look at him in a weekly, it's one Ohtani, but you look at him from a weekly standard, what is your approach on him? Because I think, you know, the hitter approach and the pitcher approach are kind of becoming a little bit easier if they're individual players. But, like, in a weekly league, I own him in Scott's Dynasty League.
Yeah.
And 9 out of 10 times I'm using him as a hitter on a weekly basis, unless you can try to get tricky and you can really get that Monday and, like, Sunday start with a push or something like that. But I mean, where do you think his sweet spot is in a weekly league? Because he's probably 75% hitter in those formats, and you almost have to look at him as a primary hitter, not even a pitcher.
I would think that's probably the way you use him. I think there are a handful of circumstances, mostly like the rare occasions. I think there might've been one or two times where he got two starts last week, and the Angels last year did, towards the end of the season, they went to more of a modified six-man rotation where they were willing to skip someone to get him on the sixth day rather than just going on the sixth pitcher, which it's a mild impact, but if they did that over the course of a full season, it might mean 4 two-start weeks instead of one or two. I think the other situations would be, like, if they only have 5 games for hitting and he's starting as a pitcher, that might lean it towards him being a pitcher, and then the short weeks, you know, week one, if you play where it's only Thursday through Sunday or whatever it is, and he's starting as a pitcher, I think you definitely use him as a pitcher there then rather than a hitter.
But is he top 10 overall to you? That version?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think either way, especially in Roto, because the speed power is so valuable. And I think there's potentially some room with the shift changes that he could, you know, be a little bit of a better batting average source as well. Let's move on to catcher, and I'll try to, we'll see how many positions we can hit. We're obviously bumping up against it, so I'll try to just get one question for each position. We'll just see how many we can get to. And I think the big one at catcher is Scott and Frank both have a fairly significant gap between JT Realmuto and Dalton Varsho in JT Realmuto's favor. $25 JT Realmuto for Scott, $20 Dalton Varsho for Scott, $28 and $22 for Frank. I've actually got Varsho as my number one catcher. And it's very close, $1 difference between them in terms of auction values. Am I getting over my skis on Dalton Varsho?
No, I don't think so. I don't have, I mean, I do have Realmuto as my number one, but I don't have a big gap. I'm actually looking at my ranks right now. I have them within 10 spots of each other on my overall. So they're in that range. And, you know, you can make the art. Realmuto saved a lot of his value on the way uptick on stolen bases. I think if those stolen bases didn't exist, and I'm not, hey, breaking news, great analysis. But like, if he didn't have those stolen bases, this wouldn't even be a conversation. Yep. But he did have those stolen bases, and he continues to prove it. But Varsho does too. And Varsho is going to be probably moving around, might play more catcher than we think. He's going to be in the outfield. Hopefully the team is going to still let him run, and it's a big power guy. I really just think they're kind of 1A, 1B. And then you got Adley Rutschman, you kind of throw into that top tier when you're looking at, like, you know, top elite hitters. But Adley might look like more of a version of Realmuto without the stolen bases. So you could argue that Varsho and Realmuto are just the top tiers. I don't see a need for a huge differential between them.
All right, let's move on to first base, where pretty much everyone agrees on the top five in some order. The Freddie Freeman or Vladimir Guerrero at number one, Paul Goldschmidt or Pete Alonso at number three. Where do you come out on those? Are you Freeman over Vlad and Goldschmidt over Alonso, or vice versa?
I am Vlad at the top. Which I will tell you, this has actually been my biggest struggle, a position at this top, where there was a time where I had Goldie at the top, and I think it was warranted, but I settled with Vlad on the top, Freddie Freeman at two, and then Alonso followed by Goldschmidt. So that's how I paired them out. I think it is crazy close, but I kind of do agree, like, bad year of Vlad was still a pretty good year, and there's some pretty considerable, like, changes that he can make and getting the ball back up in the air a little bit, and projections like fly on that as well. And Freddie Freeman is just so safe. So I think all those guys are just like 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D, and it's a great spot to be in. But I am Vlad, and then Freeman, and then Pete Alonso.
The one thing with Freeman, and I wonder how it's going to be impacted, is he always steals a handful of bases in a way that's not like super projectable, but he had a career high 13 steals last season, which is, you think going to the analytically inclined Dodgers wouldn't be the case, but he's one of those guys, kind of like we talked about with Bryce Harper, where when he's hitting more singles and doubles and rather than home runs, he runs a little bit more. And I could see
compensating.
He's such a smart base runner, he's such an efficient base runner over the course of his career, that like I could see that being a situation where he steals like 15 bases with the new rules and just takes advantage of it being a little bit easier. So that's one thing in his favor.
And something I would add in with him just real quick, also interesting, is he was hitting in the two hole more than any other spot, but it was 83 to 76 games between hitting two and three. His stolen bases were almost identical at both spots. So it's like he wasn't stealing bases when he was hitting two. He stole seven hitting two, and he stole six hitting three. So still, even in that primary RBI situation, he was still kind of going when Trey Turner was hitting in front of him. So I think that's interesting. The guys behind him, they were still willing to let him run a bit.
That's a good one. All right. Second base, it's Altuve for Scott and Frank at number one. I've got Marcus Semien number one. Are you on Altuve? Do you trust the stolen base increase for him last season? I think he got to 21. And the other question for me that might just explain the gap between them is, do we think Marcus Semien's just going to be a slow starter from now on with the new ball and how it affected offense in April league-wide last year?
I kind of wonder if he will be. I think that could be easy to bake in, but boy, the thing that makes you feel good about him is he knows how to build it back up. Like, he was really able to kind of like recompensate for that missed time, that horrid April that he had. But I mentioned before, I'm actually a Jazz guy. I like Jazz at the top.
Okay, interesting.
A little smooth Jazz. So that's my top guy. And then it's Altuve. So if we want to like not have Jazz in the conversation, then we're going to go to Altuve. I don't believe a repeat of those exact stolen bases is on the table. And that's if I did, I think I would have Altuve at the top, because he is safe as safe can be. So I think it's tier one of Chisholm and Altuve in my mind. And then Albies and Semien exist in tier two.
All right. We already talked about the third base question that I was going to ask you. That's the Bobby Witt question. So we'll move on to shortstop. How are you handling Fernando Tatis coming with that suspension?
I want to draft him. probably not drafting him. Okay. He's going to keep moving up. He's going inside right around the top 20. So you have got to expend a top 2-round pick for him. Projections are insane on him, obviously, on this year. I actually think he's a great buy in Dynasty overall because there's just a lot of negativity that's surrounded by him. I am willing to do it, especially in like, let's take a 15-team roto and I have like the third pick and it comes back around and he's falling. I just don't want to overpay for a month's missed production, except in smaller leagues, I'm way more likely. If I'm playing in a 10-team league, I am going to overreach for Tatis because that's going to give me a little bit of an advantage. Maybe even 12-team, if we're being honest. 12-team, I might be willing to pay the cost. 15, I think it's a little bit tougher. You could definitely make do and you can definitely get going with it, but I'm probably not going to have as many shares. But I would love to. I would love to get my my late April on or May on stats of Fernando.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about him, and you can't just say, well, this is what he did in 130 games in 2021 because every season's different and production fluctuates. But it's hard not to look at what he did in 2021 when he played 130 games, was dealing with that shoulder injury throughout the season. 42 homers, 99 runs, 97 RBI, 25 steals, 282 batting average. Those are his numbers in 132 games. Like, that's just, if he does that in 130 games this season, that's probably first round value. That might be top five player value.
All right. I think it's easy first round value. I just think that the only thing you're also attaching to him just is a little bit of a question with whatever it was, the ringworm and blah blah blah. This, you know, like what effect did that have on here? There's a lot of protection in that lineup. There's a lot of potential to be hit in or to hit guys in, and he is an elite athlete, and he's probably going to be out for blood. I mean, this dude is going to want to prove everybody wrong. But you have that slight little thing in the back of your head.
Some people in his locker room, based on the quotes that came out last year when he got suspended.
Him and Manny seemed like they were best buddies, but I don't know. Like, I've been at the Padres camp for like 3 straight years in the very beginning, and those two definitely have like a rapport and stuff like that. But it does seem like it was a little bit fractured. Like, Manny wasn't afraid to call. I mean, Joe Musgrove was obviously the most outspoken, but I agree with you on that. There's like guys in the locker room that he's going to be trying to prove as well.
All right. And then we'll go a little bit over. We're a little bit over already, but it's an hour and two. That's fine. Outfield, I just got one question, and this is for you. You're the Arizona guy. I've got Jake McCarthy inside of my top 24. Am I too excited about him? He's outside of the top 30 for Frank and Scott. He hit 284 with an OPS right around 770 in 99 games last season. 23 stolen bases is the headline number there, though. And his numbers in AAA are very good. 307, 14 home runs, and 86 career AAA games. He will be 26 in July. He's a little older. Was last year one? Was that a fluke? Do you think he can be a very, very good fantasy option?
Well, I have him just a little bit outside of yours. I think I am higher than them. I'm more in your camp on this. I believe I've got him at outfielder 26 right now. So I'm just a little bit outside of where you are. My question is going to be the commitment Arizona has to him, because I'm not 100% sure on that. I have heard rumors from some people that the Diamondbacks were shopping McCarthy around. Corbin Carroll's the guy I think they put at the top, but I wouldn't put it against them doing it. Here's the deal. Like, I don't think it's ever going to be an elite power guy, but if Lovello is comfortable with this team to continue to run, they might lead the league in stolen bases if he allows it, because you're talking about Rojas and McCarthy, 20 stolen base guys. Corbin Carroll, I legit think, can go 30 this year if he hits well at the top of the lineup. It's just going to be the commitment with the amount of guys that they have out there. I'm worried about a little bit of platoon. There's a lot of lefties that are in that lineup, but I think it's worth the risk because the overall cost isn't insane. And outfield is the worst this year. Terrible. So I will take more risks, and that's why I've got McCarthy up there, because I mean, even on the lowest of projections, you're looking at the Bat X putting him at 28 stolen bases, which is actually, I was about to say this, that's higher than Steamer. So yeah. I'm very much in for McCarthy being able to do it. I'm a little bit worried about how the team treats him, but I'll take the risk.
All right, and that's going to do it for Fantasy Baseball Today. I almost said Fantasy Football Today in 5 because that's the other podcast I host, and it's just like, as soon as I go, and that's going to do it, because that's how I close every episode, and my muscles immediately went to Fantasy Football Today in 5. But no, this is Fantasy Baseball Today, the full episode. We're going to do Fantasy Baseball Today in 5 shortly, and there's a very good chance I will mess that outro up for sure. For Chris Welsh, I'm Chris Towers. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk some first-year player draft rankings. We'll see you then.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.